All right, good morning, welcome. My name is Austin. I'm a part of the team here at Waypoint. If you were around last week, quite a peculiar team, right? If you weren't, that's totally cool. Welcome. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The church has done a lot of strange things over the years as it pertains to how we experience God. Case in point. That's our lead pastor, Blair, dressed like a, wow, who's the guy again? Dennis Rodman, that's right, I had to do that because there were some students who were like, who is that guy? We don't know who that guy, I know. I was born in the 90s, so I kind of know who he is, all right? So how we experience God, that is the question that we're going to be asking. How do you experience God? And like I said, over the church has a strange track record of being a little weird at times. Things from snakes to drinking Kool-Aid. I don't know. That's where that phrase comes from. The church. Thank you. Welcome to that one. But more often than not, when we talk about how we can experience God, we think of things like scripture, worship music, prayer, sermons, serving, right? All things that you kind of hear on a regular basis from a stage or kind of in the church itself. And I think that's good. And I would agree that we can experience God in those things. But more often than not, those things have become things that we do alone. Or they become things that we have individualized and have made self-interested. Don't get me wrong. I am saying we can experience God in those things. Absolutely. I just think that we don't fully experience God in those things without the church, without community, without each other. Without each other, these things are like experiencing a 3D movie without those little glasses that they give you. It's like music without the bass. It's like eating your favorite meal with a cold. Right? You know what I'm talking about? You know what it's supposed to taste like, but it doesn't quite taste like that. I know you know. Right? And it's kind of a letdown. Doesn't taste like it's supposed to. Us together are an irreplaceable part, integral to fully experiencing God. Blair and Mitchell talked about that a little bit last week as they came up here, and they set this up for us, this idea, as they reminded us that the church isn't a place as much as it is a people. That together we represent God. Together we are the church, a people who are peculiar, in a sense, because we are set apart to represent God. We're called to live together in a way that looks drastically different, peculiar, or even weird to the world around us. And also, peculiar, in a sense, because we believe that we can know and experience God in real, tangible ways as we represent Him together. Growing up, I didn't go to church a lot. My family, we were, for the most part, CEO Christians, which means Christmas and Easter only. So other than being the most excruciatingly boring hour of my life on Christmas and Easter, church didn't really mean much to me. It wasn't until I was in middle school when I started attending a Wednesday night youth group that church really started to mean something to me. And by that, I mean it became the place that my friends and I would goof off, and the place that the girl I had a crush on attended. So, I mean, it got better. And occasionally, the place where there would be this moment in the service, sometimes, like once a month or so, when they would tell us to spread out, find a quiet spot in the room, don't touch each other, all right, get far enough apart. They would dim the lights, and they would play this reflective worship song and just encourage us to just experience Jesus. And over time, I would sort of use this, I would use this time to pray and ask Jesus, more often than not, just to forgive me. I mean, to help me be a better Christian. And once it was over, I mean, yeah, I would feel a little closer to Jesus. But I would just kind of move on from that experience and not really tell anyone about it, or no one really knew what was going on, that experience I was having with Jesus, and then, you know, just back to goofing off with my friends, pretty much. That was my Jesus experience for a long time. And life went on, and I made some poor choices at the start of high school. I ditched my old youth group friends because they were kind of lame and boring. Started hanging out with some guys that were not a great influence on me. Kind of got sucked into the scene of being cool or popular, and obsessing over being liked and wanting to be liked. And my old friends, I just kind of blew them off. I would lie to them about what I was doing or what I was up to, why I couldn't hang out or why I wasn't going to youth group. I even started to act like they weren't my friends around other people because they weren't cool. I was a tool, pretty much. And it went on like this. It went on like this for a while, and it wasn't until winter of my sophomore year in high school when my youth pastor reached out. He had known me from middle school all the way up, and he reached out, and he was like, "Hey, you're coming to the winter retreat this year, right?" Winter retreats, for those of you that don't know, if you didn't have the privilege of ever going on, winter retreats are this weekend where the youth group gets away. They go to a someplace fun, usually like a church camp or something, and there are games and activities and messages and worship, and it all basically leads up to one like big dim the lights moment, spread out, right, reflective worship song, Jesus experience, everyone's crying, right? It's kind of how it goes. So my answer was hard pass. Definitely not. Won't be there. Sorry. Not sorry. I didn't want to be around my old friends. I definitely didn't know what my relationship with Jesus was like at the moment. That wasn't going well. And I said, no, I'm not going this year. Sorry. Can't make it. I gave every excuse in the book, and my youth pastor just poked holes in them. Like, I can't pay this year. I'll pay for you. All right. I actually am busy that weekend. No, I talked to your mom. She said you're free. Dang it. So I caved. I didn't cave. I didn't have any more excuses. So I said, fine, I'll be there. And sure enough, first night there, it's one of those Jesus experiences. And except it was a little different to the, I don't know if they forgot to tell us to spread out or what, but anyway. And I remember in the moment praying, God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for who I've been. I don't want to be like this anymore. Please forgive me, God. I need you. Jesus, I need you. And this isn't the first time I've prayed that before. Like I said, moments like this are kind of like a staple cliche moment at winter retreats. Every other winter retreat I've been on, I probably prayed something along those lines. But this time it was different. I remember as I was praying, a friend of mine, probably the friend that I had hurt the most, came and sat next to me as I was praying. And I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know who it was at the time. He put his arm around me. And this is actually a different moment. I'll get to that moment. That's me. We'll get there. It was actually really cool that there was a picture taken of it. But he puts his arm around me. And I'm praying, and I'm praying these words. And all of a sudden, they just start to mean a little bit more. Then I feel some hands on my neck, on my shoulder, my arm. And it was the other friends of mine. They're sitting behind me. And I broke. I broke in that moment. I don't think I realized how lonely I was. How broken I felt and ashamed I was for how I treated people, my closest friends. I don't think I realized how lost I felt. I don't think I realized how close to a really dangerous place that I was. I mean, I can reflect on that moment now, and I can look back on it, and I can realize that. And in that moment, as I was covered by arms and hands of people I thought hated me because of what I had done, again, in that moment, I was reminded that I wasn't alone. That, in fact, I wasn't hated. That I was loved. And as I'm praying, like, God, forgive me. Forgive me, Lord. I'm feeling the warm hands, warm arms surrounding me. I didn't know it at the time, but I needed someone. I needed a person. Like I said, I had prayed that prayer before, many times, in a dimly lit, ambiance set environment, but I had never had a moment where someone came alongside me and made me feel like I was actually forgiven. I didn't know it, but I needed the warmth of someone's arm around my shoulder, the feeling of hands being laid on my back and arms. I needed that. And that picture, you could put that up again. This is actually after that prayer. And I really understood what it felt like to be forgiven. I think it's really easy for us to kind of like, God, forgive me, and you know it, right? Like, you know it, but it's entirely different when you can feel it, and that only happened through a moment between me and another person, another human made in God's image. This idea of church, this idea that Blair and Mitchell talked about last week, how representing God best happens, really only happens in the we, in the us. It's this image. I was able to look, and he's one of my best friends today. We catch up on a regular basis. I was able to put my arm around him and say, I'm sorry, and ask for forgiveness. And even though I already knew I was forgiven, to hear the words, of course I forgive you, dude. Love you. Glad you're here. It meant so much more. The forgiveness of Christ, the forgiveness of God became real and tangible in my life. I needed someone to meet me there. I needed someone to tell me something I already knew but didn't know fully. In those moments, I knew Jesus forgave me, but I didn't fully know what it meant until someone met me there. I needed someone. I didn't know it at the time, but I needed someone. In preparation for this weekend, I shared my story with Noah. He's going to be coming up and kind of bringing this home. And I shared the story with him, and he sent me a song. And we thought it was worth sharing with you all as well. So take a second. And I actually, hold on. Band, come on up. I didn't do what I was supposed to. Band, you guys need to come. We're just going to watch an empty stage. This song, I listened to it a couple times before, and then I listened to it several more times. And I think it communicates something we all need. And like I said, some of you are like, that's Noah's iPad. Yeah, it's Noah's, because he's going to be coming up after me. Similar to how Blair and Mitchell did it last week, it's a little bit of a different feel with this series, this peculiar series, a little bit weird. So, Noah's going to come up, and he's going to bring it home, but we thought it was important that you guys listen to the song. And hopefully there's a part of your story that resonates with it too.
Thank you. I love that song. And the artist, if you're interested, if you liked it, is Joy Oladokun. And I just got put onto her stuff not super long ago, and I just love it. And I particularly wanted to share that song with you because I think it highlights for us a couple of beautiful truths. First is she has a recognition of her own humanity and frailty and proclivity to make mistakes, right? And she says that in the bridge where she says, somebody like me isn't perfect. Somebody like me needs care. In the moments I'm heavy and hurting. So there's this stress, there's this imperfection, there's this guilt, this need for care that she feels in her life. And I don't know about you, but I think in the human experience, that is something that, at least in moments, we can all relate to. It's this idea that we need care, or that we're frail in and of itself, and what's so beautiful. And the second truth that I think is highlighted in the song is this fact that she turns to other people for that healing. That within herself, she feels like she just makes mistakes and she can't do it. And she's an outsider and messed up. And yet, and it says in the chorus, can anybody say a prayer? Can anybody light a candle for somebody like me? It's the least that God can do for giving me more than he can handle. I don't know if God actually gives us that, but again, in your stress, in your frailty, like it feels as though like God is giving me too much right now. Can he at least provide somebody to carry this, to hold on to this? Can somebody say a prayer? Can somebody like on my behalf step in because I can't do this alone, that in some way healing would come through others? And I think that's the truth in this, is that we all need each other. If we're being completely honest with ourselves, we all need each other. There's this poet and author that I really enjoy. His name is Ross Gay. And I read a couple of his stuff, and I just finished this book by him. And it's called Inciting Joy. Inciting Joy. And what he does, he writes all about gratitude and joy and consistently writes on this topic. And in this book, each chapter, he goes through something in his life that brings him joy, that he's grateful for, and then sort of reflects on it, gets introspective, and draws out why is this such a joy in my life? Why does this bring me gratitude? And in this one chapter, he's talking about gardening. Gardening is something that is a great joy for him. And as he's reflecting upon that, he says this quote. He says, I bristle at the idea of gardening as an act of self-sufficiency or independence. I get the premise. For instance, gardening makes us less reliant on industrial food system that is brutal in 1,000 ways. Growing what you can't buy is awesome. Knowing where you come from and how it's grown is lovely. Sticking it to Walmart is fun, etc. But a garden, a healthy garden anyway, shows us no matter how hard you try, no matter how much you earn or stash or hoard or bunker up, no matter even your fleet of spaceships, you will never be self-sufficient or independent, because nothing living is. You will never be self-sufficient or independent because nothing living is. We talked about this last week and echoed this sort of same sentiment, and it's found, we talked through it in 2 Corinthians, and it's also found in Romans, where it says, "For just as we have many parts in one body, and all the body parts do not have the same function, so we who are many are one body in Christ, in individual parts of one another." It's echoing the same thing, that both the analogy in a garden where the roots and the system and the birds and the worms and the dirt and all of these things work together in tandem to make a garden function. The same is true with the body, right? With our own body, where we need each and everything to function with each other, to function together in order for the body to work. And the same is true as us as a community, where we need each other. Where we need each other. And I think this truth was echoed beautifully in Austin's story, right? Where he didn't even have a recognition of his loneliness, but it was there. And no, I'm good. You know, the cool guy, act tough, act like, I don't need anybody. And yet, if he was being truly honest with himself, he was struggling because he needed somebody. He desperately needed people in his life that would love him, truly care for him, truly lift him up. And until he got that, he didn't realize it. But to go beyond that, right? Like, I don't think we just need community for community's sake. I think God is found in those very moments. That we're talking today about experiencing God. So it's more than just we need each other. It's in that very moments that we support each other that God is found the most. That in the moments that we are fully loved, fully cared for, God is there. That is God. And so it's good to sing songs. It's good to, hear a message. It's good to receive this. But if we miss the fact that we should be a community connected and calling out the God within each and every one of us, then we miss this. If you really want to experience God fully, you need to begin to see God in others. Because God, the fullness of God anyway, is found in those moments of reconciliation, of forgiveness, of caring, of lifting up. The Bible says it plainly. Galatians 6:2, it says, "Bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ." Fulfill the law of Christ. Meaning, if you want to do what God has called you to do, what the law of Christ has called you to do, then bear one another's burdens. Lift each other up. Care for one another. Jesus echoes the same sentiment in a little bit of a different way in John 13:35, where he says this, "By all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another." That's it. You want to show yourself to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. If you really want to experience God in your life, love each other. Love one another. See the image of God in your neighbor. If you really want to experience God, if you really want to be a disciple of God, love. To put it as simple as I can, God is love. And if you want to show God to others, show them love. Love them. And this is why, I'm speaking personally, as much as I've had struggles with the church in places, and I'm talking big C church here. As much as I've had struggles and doubts and been stressed out and had to call out to God on behalf of things in times where the church has fallen short, and I'd be remiss to not acknowledge hurt that the church has placed on people, probably even some in the room, that struggle when they walk in those doors because they've been hurt by people. Because we fall short. And community is messy. And I'm sorry if you've had to deal with that, reconcile with that, call out to God because of that. I'm sorry. And yet, I don't think God is done with community. I don't think God is done with this. I think he's calling us to continue on this and be better, right? And so church is important. But here's my claim. Here's what I'm gonna land on. Until we recognize God in everyone, meaning I see God, the image of God, I see your worth in you. Until we recognize God in everyone and our need for everyone, and I do mean everyone, we will miss what this is all about. We'll have fun Sundays, but if we really want to experience God, we need to start to see God in those around us and recognize our need for them. And that's how we experience God. To wrap up, I have this picture that I want to put on the screen. This is a picture painted by Andre Rublev like a really long time ago, 17th, 18th century probably. I actually have no idea, but sometime, long time ago. And the first time that I saw this piece of artwork, I was almost drawn to tears. Because what he's trying to capture in this picture is God. He's trying to capture God. And when I saw it the first time, it was the first time that I fully realized and heard it, but fully realized that God himself is community. And if God himself, the Trinity, the Godhead, is a community, then why do we think that we can do this by ourselves? When I saw this, I was high school, thought I knew a lot, thought I could do things on my own, a lot similar position to Austin, who thought, no, I don't need people. And then I saw this and realized if my God is a community, he's drawing me into that as well. And that's what's so striking. The other thing that's striking about this picture to me is they're seemingly welcoming you, us, me, to that table as well. It's almost as God is saying, yeah, come take a seat here too. We got a spot open. That we should represent this in our lives, in here, in this space, where we're at, that this should be what we reflect, because he's calling us to this. In a moment here, Austin's gonna come up and we're gonna take part in communion, which is essentially Jesus saying, come to this table, come freely, come be a part of this community, come join what we have, come freely, unconditionally. You're a part of this. And so my hope for you, for us, is that as we take part in this communion, we reflect on this idea that God is calling us to this table freely and also calling us to reflect this, to represent this, to be the table in our spaces, in our neighborhoods, wherever we go, that we would see God in others and begin to see our need also for others. And that's how we experience God. That's what community looks like at its core. And that's what separates the church from everything else.